dbkmediaservices.com. You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs, John Bruce, and Bruce Knox. Hello, everybody, and welcome in to show 246 of the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. I am indeed Bruce Knox, and I will introduce the two young men across from me just momentarily. But first, I want to remind you that this and all of our SVC Sports Talks have been brought to you by Triple Crown Family Fun Center. All kinds of fun under one roof, located at 1 Nancy Wilson Way in Chillicothe. And they are open 7 days a week, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. You'll find a Cardo's Pizza and a place to have all kinds of fun. You can give them a call at 740-773-7529 or look them up on the web at TripleCrownFamilyFunCenter.com. And it is indeed the time of year when certain people take advantage of the limousine rental. I know that, if we're going to the prom, we would probably already have booked something, but you never know. Give them a call and see what's available. I'm sure that they would be glad to talk to you out there about that. That's Triple Crown Family Fun Center. We appreciate their sponsorship. I'd like to bring in our two gentlemen of the SVC persuasion. First up, John Bruce. John, how are you?
I'm doing great. Almost didn't remember how to get back in the studio tonight.
I know. It's the triple secret security that we have. It's really, really tough to remember all the codes and so forth and your pass keys and all that kind of stuff. But we're glad that you finally made it. Yeah, we were watching from afar, and we enjoyed you standing out there scratching your head quite a bit. So that was fun to get you back in here, and we're glad to have you. And then, of course, Shane Combs. Shane, how are you?
All ready to go. John, when I talked to you about coming on board earlier in the year, I knew how fun that fall and winter would be. But the shows that I really look forward to talking to you and getting your different takes on stuff really come into spring. I think what you'll find when you talk to people about SVC Sports Talk in the spring, that you'll find some of our most passionate listeners. As you know, in the spring, a lot of times we haven't had the same attention or coverage, or it's probably not the most popular of your high school sports, obviously, in terms of the way the dollars and cents work, in terms of the exposure and so forth. But what you'll find is the people who really follow our spring coverage are some of the most passionate and some of our most knowledgeable listeners. So I think you're really going to have a fun month here, capping off our first season together.
Good. It is unbelievable, gentlemen, that we're at show 246 years ago when we started podcasting. Shane, I doing some research. They said if you got over 7 shows, you've kind of cleared the hump and you will continue on. So we've done that in spades. We were talking earlier that show 250 coming up, that might be a milestone. We might want to do something different for that. But anyway, we're going to talk SVC sports tonight. And our first segment is going to be 3 up and 3 down. And this is something that we're going to – it's kind of going to be similar to our headline segment from earlier this year. So you guys are going to have 3 chances here to talk about anything and everything that is directly or indirectly involving baseball and softball. All this segment brought to us by Crown Hill Golf Club at 9500 U.S. Route 22 West, Williamsport, Ohio, 43164. If you want to write them, I don't know why you'd do that, because you can call them at 740-986-4653. It's spring, and a man's fancy turns to hitting golf balls, and some female fancies turn to hitting golf balls as well. And you can do that at Crown Hill Golf Club. Look them up on the web, too, crownhillgolfclub.com. So, guys, we're moving into the appropriately known 3 up, 3 down. And
I don't know. I guess let's Shane go first here, John, as he gives us sort of his headline for the spring, and that might kind of set an expectation for you. So let's go to Shane first on this.
Guys, I'm going to start kind of at the beginning of my thought process entering spring with winter's finish slows the start of spring. I think since we've been together last, even though we're turning our attention to spring, it's hard not to give a shout out to Zane Trace basketball, Adina basketball, some of our local wrestlers there from Zane Trace and Adina, ironically, as well. Some of those winter sports finishing up. And John, as you know, what that does is you're waiting on athletes in your spring sport, and then you're coming in. And then the other part that winter does to us in the spring is the weather. And things start inside, and no matter how much we love it, I think a coach is lying to you if they tell you, oh, I really enjoy a 2-hour baseball practice inside. You know what I mean? Like it's one of those things we all know it has to be done, and we know we have to figure it out and so forth, but the weather is such a factor, and it makes it tough to prepare. So a lot of times, I know some of these track kids are coming out to their first competitions this particular week, and you know, maybe they've only been outside a handful of times. And I know when we got into our first scrimmage week, sometimes you're going live, John, into a scrimmage, and maybe it's only the third time you've been outside all year. I think some of those winter things, that'll really show up here in the early going. I think we have some really experienced teams in our league, and I think that'll show a little bit. But as the year goes on, that stuff usually finds a way to even itself out. But I guess that's what jumps out at me in my first headline, guys, just to get started, is how much the weather and how this transition from winter sports to spring sports is so different. Obviously you deal with it from fall to winter, but I don't think there's nearly the dynamics there that maybe you go through in terms of this winter to spring.
I think that was appropriate. All right, John, we'll move to your first three up, three down.
All right. I completely agree about the indoor practice thing. I kind of went towards gameplay so far, and on the baseball side, hot start across the SBC, but don't overlook the Warriors. The league started 22-10 overall in non-conference play, but Adina was 0-3, so 22-7 for the league overall. But Adina also played an extremely difficult schedule, and I think this week we'll definitely see kind of a little bit more of what Adina has when they open up SBC play at Westfall. And let me tell you, I know people will hear this after they play on Monday,
hopefully.
But the weather that they're going to have to face at Westfall is going to be unreal. Because I coached at Westfall for 12 years, and it's 10 degrees colder there anyway. And the fact that it's going to be 45 on Monday, I know that we're we won't be released until Monday night, but man, that's gonna be a rough one to play in, and you know, I know Coach Thomas will have his kids ready because they've been practicing in this anyway. But you know, I think Adina still has a lot of ability to be at the top of the SEC. It's a tough one to start with. Then they go and play Zane Trace on Wednesday, and coming off, they're one of those teams that you know had their regional run in basketball. A couple of their basketball players didn't come back out. That I think they expected to. I know at least one didn't. And so that could lead to their slow start as well. I definitely don't overlook Adina. Got a lot of talent. They're going to be a really good ball club this year.
All right.
Man, that's well said, Bruce, because it kind of goes with my headline there of they do have some key pieces there off that basketball team, John. And then with the schedule they play, that's really well said. I think that's a good point that kind of almost kind of directly hits with what I'm saying as well there. So we're on the same page there for sure.
Yeah.
All right, Shane, let's go to your second headline.
I think for me, spring season headline here, I'm going to go special to some, a private nightmare for others. You know, what what strikes me here, John, a little bit is, again, our passionate for this is, it goes back to what I said to you in the opening. People who have been invested in spring sports for as long as we have, you know, we're all in. I was thinking the other day, however many years I've been out of high school, 23 or 4, whatever it is, I've coached baseball every single spring. So I've never not known spring sports. And that's not the case for a lot of even big sports fans, you know what I mean, in terms of how they follow them. You know, if you're involved a little bit with the OHSCA or if you're involved a little bit with the administrations, there's – it's not going to ring dollar signs for sure. It's not the. It's probably the hardest to schedule. It requires a lot of flexibility in terms of the way the schedule is going to be ever changing throughout the year. It's the end of the year for a lot of people. Let's face it, in the land of education, John. After we get through this, the upcoming week or two here of testing. You know what I mean? You feel like you've hit the end, you hit the brick wall, so to speak. So, you know, when you get people involved, you know, there's a lot of passion in taking care of the fields and the flexibility and schedules. And there's things that maybe spring sports deal with. Like, I'll give you an example. Every year, maybe someone from Huntington can sure up the details if you're listening here. But every year, the Huntington senior trip, they try to find a point in the year where they can best put it that won't impact sports too much. Well, guess when they put it? They put it right in the preseason of the spring sport. And if I'm not mistaken, the seniors, John, every year, I can remember all the way back to, you know, when Chad Carroll was baseball coach there and he talked to me about it. And they go on this trip right around the either the last week of your regular of your preseason or the week before. So, you know, when you're looking at a Huntington senior class like this year, and obviously like a McCloskey or a Snyder on the baseball side or a Collins or Black or that group there on the softball side, that's a pretty big deal. Like, you know, made in terms of what you're missing. So that's just something that comes to my mind in terms of how unique this is and some of the things you deal with. But I just think a lot of our schools have really handled it well. The games I've been out to see in terms of my scouting and then the games I've been a part of, honestly, have been played pretty well. It's been pretty surprising. I really enjoyed what the VA has done for our area over the years. It's First Pitch Classic's no different. That's a big time event. Really was appreciative to be a part of that. Yeah, so I just think that the theme early in the show here for me, guys, is just how special spring sports are for the people that have been lifers and how you end up meeting some of the most passionate people in high school sports.
All right, great. John, let's go to your second three up, three down.
I do want to throw in, I've only not been involved with coaching for one of those seasons after I've been out of school, so this is my 15th year. So it's I definitely understand what you're saying on that one. So I went back to the game side and just kind of went to a early 90s kids game show with Power Surge.
Wow.
Like Mike O'Malley would say I can't even remember what the show was, but it was pre-hat Mike O'Malley. So it was before Guts. But he would just always yell Power Surge and get real excited. On the softball side, even with the cold weather, there's been 12 home runs hit throughout the league. And 10 of those have came between Huntington and Uniota. Now those are the last two unbeatens on the softball side.
Mm-hmm.
And also they match up on Monday night. You know, that's obviously this is after the show comes out. Should be a really fun matchup to see over at Uniota. Weather-wise, you know, hopefully weather holds off and it can be an outstanding game for both teams. Braden Collins with 3 home runs. Holton Miller with a couple for Uniota. Just really impressive the way these kids are swinging the bats early. And like you said, with that senior trip in the middle of preseason, still Braden Collins hitting 3 home runs already. Not missing a beat with the time off. So I mean, those those two are two of the three that I really looked at in the preseason as likely favorites in the league, along with Westfall. So that, you know, could be, that's a big weapon when it comes to softball is the long ball. And I thoroughly enjoy seeing it. Also, I did get to see a home run or a couple home runs this week in baseball, which thankfully not against my team, but in games, in games I watch, you know, it's a long ball mixed game, you know, a lot more interesting. And it's something that'll to go with the speed and slap hitting and softball should really make Monday's game really fun to watch.
Yeah, you're talking about the long ball. I know Marcy Dudgeon and Elizabeth Stonehart, I know, hit home runs for Westfall there. You kind of touched on it there. I mean, on the softball side, Westfall kind of has earned the right to be the favorite, you think, with this Uniota Huntington game. I don't care if it's opening night or not. That's a pretty big game. I mean, do you feel like those are the three teams at the top with the Alexander injury there at Piketon and so forth? Or am I missing someone, you think?
I think it's probably those three. You know, if Alexander's healthy, then, you know, Piketon's right in there. But, I think Uniota has enough experience coming back. I know they had a letdown season last year with their first losing season in quite a while, but getting Jayla Campbell back is huge for them.
Oh yeah.
But the Kello girl is probably the best pitcher in the SVC right now, which will definitely keep Huntington in it in any game. And the fact that they've got great speed and great athletes should definitely give Huntington a shot. And then, like you said, Westfall, they're always in it. Pitching's going to be a big thing for them. I know Dudgeon's started off a little bit on the mound that's something that they haven't really had to deal with recently, because usually the best players would be able to just step in and pitch well, like the Brown girl.
Right.
Yeah. I think they're going to hit. They always do. So I think there could be a lot of high scoring games. I don't know if there's the shutdown pitcher across the league, but there definitely should be a lot of fun games on the softball side this spring.
Well, I think it's also interesting that Uniota has been using the two pitchers, which in softball isn't the norm with Pinkerton and Fisher, obviously both really, really good. Obviously Pinkerton can impact the game in so many more ways than just pitching, but the number of different kids in the Uniota lineup, that's what's jumped out at me here in the early going. That's going to be the challenge for Kello and Huntington there on the opening night. And again, I know we're talking about things that's going to already have happened, but that's going to be a matchup that should tell us a lot by the time we meet next week to talk.
Yeah. I agree.
All right, Shane, we're going to you for your third three up, three down.
Okay, well, I think this is – we just touched on it in softball, and I think softball, baseball, and then I'll even throw in some track here to give them some love. I think depth will be the difference. I think as we start to talk all year long, we're going to talk about a lot of star power. You start to look at the all-league teams from last year. There's plenty coming back in all of our sports. But when we start breaking down these particular things, first of all, in baseball, the depth of the pitching is going to be huge. Teams on paper are going to look pretty good in terms of when they have that Monday night lineup on the field. And then as you get to Wednesday night, or you haven't forbid, you get the rain and you get one of those Monday, Tuesday, Wednesdays, John, we've all been there. That's where things are going to separate a bunch. So a lot of teams in our baseball league have some serious question marks when they get past the number two and the pitching staff. The softball, obviously that depth doesn't have to be there. I mean, if you have a little bit, fine, but the depth I'm talking about in softball, I guess, is what I was just referring to in terms of the offensive lineup, teams that are able to get something out of the 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And then as we get into track, I think track is where the depth takes over as well, because as you look at some of these early results, it's the not just the one person that can go out and dominate 3, 4 different events themselves, but it's the teams that can find those 5, 6, 7 extra athletes to put the relay teams together, or to get some points, or to get some third and fourth place finishes out of certain events where maybe other schools aren't scoring at all. So I think depth is something I'm going to really keep my eye on. Obviously, John will highlight the star power, but it'll be interesting maybe in the shows to come to kind of focus in on that particular topic, I thought, to see if we can't highlight some of these X factors around the league.
All right. Okay, John, let's wrap it up with your third three up, three down.
Speaking of depth, red streak pitching not just piked into a 4-1 start.
The
streaks have rode outstanding pitching to a hot start with – team ERA below one in their five games, only four earned runs. Pikeman's pitching will be tested with three road games this week, including at St. Trace and Juniata, and then a tricky Southeastern team on Wednesday. I'd heard that they had a lot of pitching, and you just kind of never know until the season starts. And seems like, I mean, shutting out a Valley team that returned a lot of pieces from a district championship last year, really impressive. Shutting out a pretty decent Megs team to start the year. Just really good start for Piketon pitching. Now, they gave up a few unearned runs in there, so they got to tighten up the defense a little bit. But man, that's a, I won't say a dream start, because dream starts 5-0, really, but just really kind of overachieving start, it seems like. But they have a lot of talent, it's been a lot of different guys pitching. So it seems like they have the depth. You're seeing 4, 5, 6 different names pitching for them that have all seemed to kind of hold their own, with Matthews and Volgamore really kind of being the top ones, and Cannon Pack coming in and pitching well in relief a couple of times. Just really that could make Piketon, a very difficult matchup this year, because, like Shane, it going down to Piketon to winning is never easy. Really, winning on the league, down the road in the SBC is not easy, but going out of the county.
I haven't been able to find a ballpark winning an SBC games easy.
So, it's always difficult down there. They're kind of believing. They have, they had an outstanding program the last few years. They have a new voice. Just sometimes little changes will help. We'll see where they're at this week, as they have a tough week in the SBC. And then the next week, it doesn't get any easier, as they have Westfall and Edina to start next week. But, they have a lot of talent, good pitching. Good pitching will keep you in games. And Monday night will really show how good that pitching is when they travel to St. Trace.
Yeah, well, when I do my early season scouting there, when I start to put the Piketon lineup down and look at the kids and so forth, it's pretty easy to recognize all the names. That's a pretty experienced group. Those are several kids that have produced at the varsity level already in their career.
Yep.
All right, gentlemen, so much for three up, three down. We'll probably bring that back in the coming weeks, I'm sure. Up next, we have a topic that seemingly continues to take over high school sports, and it's leaving parents with some tough choices to make. We start to take a look at our inbox here. This segment brought to us by the folks at North Fork Animal Clinic, boarding and grooming, not brooming and gording. That wouldn't be right at all. it's first week back. Please forgive me. North Fork Animal Clinic, where we care. They feel out there that a good veterinarian must know each and every one of the animals that they're treating and the temperament of each pet. So they have the animals have likes and dislikes just like people, and their practice is limited to small animals so that they get to know everything about their patients. And we want to be just like family, and their owners want them treated that way. So that's North Fork Animal Clinic Boarding and Grooming, 773-PETS. Our look at the inbox here, guys, came in with a good, well thought out question, I guess, in here. Just let me read this email, and then we'll take to looking at it a little bit. It says, I'm overwhelmed by how much club and or travel sports have taken over the high school landscape. I feel like it's hurting our high school sports, especially at the smaller schools. My kids, boys and girls, are older, and to be honest, I'm not sure what I would do if my kids were coming up through the new system today. I love the fact that my kids played everything. Is it truly possible to be a two- or three-sport athlete now? Just a thought. Perhaps I'm looking too far into this. Thanks. My family loves the show and appreciates all you do for the SVC. Shane, where do we go from here, buddy?
Well, first of all, I appreciate that. Appreciate everybody who listens. And we've had emails really similar to this, guys, but there's a couple things in here that kind of jumped out at me. I thought it was funny how they used the term new system today, because this is the appropriate time of year to talk about this, John, because I think as the dynamic of spring sports again, and I don't mean to make too much of this, it's just it's hard not to talk about it in terms of to give the fans a true perspective of what we're saying. Kids a lot of times are going to treat the springtime differently than they would, say, committing to their football team or committing to their basketball team or committing to their volleyball team or you know, and I'm not sure exactly why that is. I'm not saying it's that way everywhere. I'm just saying that that's the dynamic that's kind of out there. And the other dynamic that comes into play here is you have club volleyball off and running. You have some AAU basketball stuff. You have, you know, kids of all ages playing. I know there's kids as young as fourth, fifth, sixth grade in basketball and in volleyball traveling out of state to play, you know, all weekends. And, you know, you start to get hundreds, maybe into the thousands probably throughout the season here, playing in off-season sports where so Bruce, a lot of these kids that are playing their spring sport at their school are involved in an off-season travel type of setup that makes it really difficult. Now, I've always said, and I know we've answered this on SVC Sports Talk before, it's obviously very possible to be a two or three sport because, you know, your McCloskey, your McFadden, your Newland, Fogelsong, Dudgeon, Pinkerton, Fisher. Yeah, I hate to even start naming them because I'm going to miss a bunch of them. Mm-hmm. We have all kinds of examples of kids who do it at the highest level. Now, if you start to get to know those kids, do they work at every sport equally? Maybe not. Okay, but to say they can't play them, to say that they're not very valuable to their particular teams, I think most people that follow them would disagree. Some of those athletes that perform at a high level, maybe they play some travel for one or two, but maybe in that third sport, they just show up and play. Well, it still doesn't mean they're not still really, really good. You know, I use an example like Pinkerton in terms of, I think most people would say her best sports are volleyball, softball. And you could argue about what order you want to put those in, but look at what she does for the basketball team, John, in terms of an athletic defender and a kid that can shoot a little bit, another ball handler, so forth. You know, look at what Fogelsong means to three winning programs at Edina. He's a kid that comes to mind in terms of the impact he has. So I just look at, or a Dudgeon, you know, because of the new soccer program there at Westfall and some of the different impacts. So I think each of these kids I'm mentioning have proven it can happen. Now, what's the new system doing? I think it kind of goes back to a little bit of the Little League situation. You know, we've talked about this before. The coaches are out. The parents are in. The community kind of takes over. So your elite players are looking for an opportunity to grow. And as I've said before, if you're elite or if you're pretty good at a young age, there's opportunities for you to do it. Everyone else kind of gets thrown under And I don't want to say forgotten about, but in a way it is. What happens, these travel teams will take people out, and this is where I think it's killing the small school. I don't know that this is hurting the big school quite as much. I'd love to maybe get John's take on that, but it's killing the small school, because here's what happens. You come on out on these travel teams, and they – and you might be in the fourth, fifth, sixth grade, Bruce. What they're doing, they're whining and dining you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're the fanciest uniforms you've ever thought about wearing when you're in the fourth, fifth. You have picture day. You travel. You eat out. You swim with your friends at the hotel. It's fun.
Yeah.
Well, then what happens is you come back to the school and you're wearing who knows what uniforms, and you're playing with talent levels of yourself all the way down to kids that are just being introduced to the game for the first time. And you've had enough of it. So after a while, you just quit on it. Mm-hmm. And at a smaller school, it really ties the hand of the coach, because, it's really hard to compete with that. So the community dynamic is another factor that really becomes key here. And I don't know about the bigger school. I don't know if it hurts as much. Like, you look at a lot of our league champions and so forth and different things. I don't know that the little league dynamic is really what is important there. I don't know. I mean, I think even at some of our champions at the smaller schools, I think there's been other factors beyond just little league that have served in terms of that. So if I were going to put a spring touch on it before I pass it over to you, John, I would say junior high baseball is a great example of this. Think about how tough it is, no matter what school you're at, to get people to buy into junior high baseball at your school. It's a lot easier for an elite kid. Why wouldn't an elite kid sometimes want to go travel and play where they can play at a higher level? They can play more nights a week. I know our junior high team right now, they struggle for facilities. Where can we practice? Where can we play? If you get rain on a Sunday, you may go 2 weeks and only play like one baseball game. So it's just tough. I mean, there's a lot of dynamics there, and the travel ball is offering people a chance to almost go out, find where they fit, and find where, we can be successful. If I'm really good, I can go do this. If I'm not as good, I could play on this team here and still play and so forth. You can almost go out and find your fit where – if you can get kids to the eighth, ninth grade, usually you can save them and make them a part of your program. But I'm telling you, as someone that's been involved in multiple sports for about 20 years now, it is really, really hard to sell a family of a talented fourth, fifth, sixth grader into looking 3-4 years down the road in terms of what's best for Southeastern, or best for Paint Valley, or best for Huntington, or best for Edina, when they're looking around saying, well, why wouldn't I just go be a part of this? Mm-hmm. So the email was really, really something that be a very appropriate spring email right now, just because, John, this seems to be when a lot of this stuff's taking place.
Yeah, I see, there's a lot of it's not just the travel ball thing also goes to like the summer sports. I mean, we don't have the Babe Ruth League anymore down for the 13, 14, 15 year olds because travel ball has really, ate up a lot of where these talented kids are going. And that's really, obviously you learn baseball in Little League, but that's a place where you can really learn a lot of different positions. You learn how to lead off. You learn different parts of the game. And now I know we still have the city league, but it was great to be able to fill up two leagues and be able to learn from different places. And now we don't have that anymore. Now we have the city league where we may have a 13-year-old playing against an 18-year-old. What's that going to help the 13-year-old when it comes to, just confidence and being able to play? So I think the travel ball goes all kinds of different ways. I do think it's cool to have for, like you said, the upper elite kids. I know at Uniota we have one kid who he goes and plays baseball down in Cincinnati instead of for the school team. But they still have enough to play school games. Mm-hmm. We have a seventh grader who plays both. He plays for the school team, and also he'll go play on a travel team during the week and play on the school team on the weekends. So it's Gee. It's a lot too, because, you know, you hope those kids stay with it once they get old enough to play, because, you know, sometimes you can wear down. Sometimes you can have some wear and tear on yourself. Now, I do think that 2 and 3 sport athletes, it's still, like you gave a ton of examples there, Shane, of that you can be elite. We also have 2 and 3 sport athletes that are, you know, maybe not elite, but they're also really key role players in each sport. Or like the Pinkerton example is great because, you know, maybe she's elite in volleyball and softball, but she uses different skills in basketball to be a great role player on that team. Mm-hmm. And ends up, you know, it's not like she's just there. It takes a lot of work for the kids to do it.
Takes a lot of money too,
to be a 2 and 3 sport athlete. Yeah. And a lot of money. I think there's chances when you get to high school, it's almost cheaper to be a 3 sport athlete because then you're not playing a ton of travel stuff. So, you know, you're busy every night with your school stuff. But I think, you know, specialization is, I think it does kind of hurt the area, in general on, you know, in different sports. You know, you could have a kid that, you know, at this point might just be playing basketball that could really help out, the football team. It could really help out, you know, could help out the volleyball team. Or when it comes to the spring, could help the track. I know we've got, a lot of the football coaches are trying to get kids to run track also, which I think helps. But you got to have, especially at the smaller schools, you got to have the best athletes out, just playing, be able to help the school out any way they can. And it's really hard for kids to see it. But I played 3 sports my whole high school career, and I wouldn't have done anything different. Maybe I could have been better at a couple of the sports if I would have taken a season off every once in a while, but just to me, it wasn't worth it. I just wanted to compete every day. Anytime I could compete, it's, you know, what I wanted to do. So hopefully kids coming up will see that. I know we had some 7th graders this year take the spring off from baseball. You know, that they say they're going to come back when it gets towards high school, but, you know, you just never know if a kid's going to come back, but at least there's still 2 sport athletes. It's hard right now. And I know some of these kids that are 2 and 3 sport athletes are taking AP classes in school too. So they're working their butts off all the time. And right. it's not just sports related. It's in the classroom. It's at home working on homework or projects. And it's just, there's just a lot for kids to do right now. And I understand where, especially emails coming from on how difficult it is for, kids these days.
Now, John, in the baseball, softball, I think this is where track almost benefits from not having so much of a little league. I think sometimes what I see with kids is they come up through, and in 7th grade, they're introduced to this new thing of track. Mm-hmm. Schools promoted, obviously, because that's where your busing and your paid coaches are at. Obviously, in junior high, it's more club sport and for baseball, softball. But do you think, I mean, obviously 13, 14 is where we're losing kids in baseball. Seems like so many boys across America played little league baseball. Everyone played some T-ball or tried them some little league baseball. I look back on my childhood, and I mean, I played a boatload of baseball to the point where by the time I was 12 years old, I had played so much baseball, I was a little burnt out. And it was situations where I was actually going to play for the Orange there with Chris and so forth. And later on, I came back and played with him a little bit, but I remember kind of being burnt out. Well, then what happened is my love for basketball, and I was much better at basketball. Now, I was in a situation where Unioto was so talented that I had to start to make some decisions by my junior year in terms of, you know, getting into some coaching and love of the game and so forth. But I just look at it and think to myself that we're having so much trouble at at every level or every school, just keeping kids involved in the seventh grade, where if I were to move this over to basketball or volleyball, I think sometimes we're starting to lose kids more in the fifth or sixth grade because they're introduced to it so young that – you know, they start to find, or like I said before, those really elite players, why wouldn't they love playing on their travel team far more than they do for their, you know, little league program or whatever, when they're traveling all over, you know, who knows where, playing Sunday afternoon or Saturday mornings. I just think that it's funny how different sports have some different disconnect periods where they're losing kids. And I think it's something that you really have to be aware of as a varsity coach. I don't know how much power as a varsity coach you have to fix it, because I think the dynamics in the community is kind of outgrown the varsity coach's control. But don't you think that's an interesting dynamic to look at? What age group is a particular sport truly losing kids from maybe staying with their program?
Yeah, it's definitely interesting, I think you can look at it a lot of different ways, but I mean, you're seeing it in the school, because you are seeing those school programs, I mean, fifth, sixth grade, with, like you said, volleyball and basketball, and then some kids can just be like, well, I didn't make that travel ball team, so what am I going to do? So they may just lose interest in it, and that kid could end up being really good down the line. Or could leave and go to another school and be really good down the line. So you just, you know, with travel ball, and I just wish that, I know you played in it, like I did, with just the intramural within the school, system. And then we played like three tournaments, I think, with the all-star group, but it was like three weekends. It wasn't a big deal. It wasn't, we didn't make this huge deal about it, but we played each other. We all had chances to be the guy or be the girl on the team, and you learn different skills that way, and I hate to see that we're losing a lot of that now. I know a lot of schools are still trying to do it within their programs, but I think the parents are getting kind of antsy and wanting to get out and,
oh, they're being crucified for it. Like, I can't believe you wouldn't want your kids to go play. Bruce, as a parent, doesn't there have to be a burnout for a parent as well when you're basically taking, you know, basically from the third grade on now, let's just use basketball for example, from the third grade on now, it's basically junior high basketball.
Right.
So by the time you get to seventh grade, you've already gone through 4 years of junior high basketball, in essence, in terms of, I could see where the parents are even a little bit burnt out, or if you are a parent of an elite player, I could see why you wouldn't want to, hey, if I'm going to do this, I might as well go do this and put them in a position where they can play at a higher level. I understand the email in terms of, I think if I scroll back up here, they were saying, I'm not sure what I would do if I were a parent now. I thought that was one of the most intriguing lines in the entire thing.
Well, you know, there are good things about the club travel sports thing. I mean, for particularly the elite person, but the burnout that you talk about, and my kid was on a travel basketball team for like 3 or 4 years, and my gosh, we had the local program, and then we, you know, load them up after the local program on Saturday morning and go play tournament someplace, and that would be Saturday, Sunday, and, you know, three games that Saturday, you know, maybe two on Sunday or something like that. Particularly if you've got a, you know, people that work two parent working households, I mean, you're just meeting yourself coming and going over the weekend, and then you've got the school, you know, in the interim period too. So I think that plays a part. How much do you think, Shane, and this is kind of touchy, but I'll throw it out here anyway, how much do you think that some of this is our parents living vicariously through their kids?
Well, I think I that's certainly a part of that. It's always funny. I've known a lot of people, when, you know, then as their kids get older, I'll still know them. And I'll be like, is that the same person I knew 10 years ago? Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not a parent, so I'm not sitting here to act like the judge, because I get it. I do. I get why you'd want your kid to do that. But I think what happens a lot of times is parents, and the email's referring to this, I think, that parents are truly trying to give their kid the best opportunity. Like, hey, if my kid truly likes to play volleyball, I want to give them an opportunity to travel and do these things and play at a high level. If my daughter wants to be a pitcher, if my son wants to be a pitcher, I want to try to get him the early lessons and get him thrown properly, or, you know, and that's every sport.
Yeah.
You know, you'll see it with soccer. You'll see it with different things, but it's more or less become kind of an all year thing. And I guess if a kid truly loves that sport and they want to play it all year long, and they have two or three different teams or seasons that they look at, there's nothing wrong with that. That's fine. I think it obviously hurts our school programs, yeah, because we don't keep the best athletes playing. You know what I mean? That elite basketball player would have been a good volleyball player just by showing up and playing some volleyball.
Mm-hmm.
That elite track kid, that's no longer running because they might be out playing AAU basketball is obviously hurting the track program. So I think what you're asking is fair. I think a lot of parents do look at it as, man, I wish I would have put more time into this, or I wish I would have had this option, or so forth. So, you know, a lot of times I can't fault parents for what they're wanting to do. I just think, again, it's a different time period, and it's a different it's not just about school. I still think it's a culture thing.
Mm-hmm.
When we grew up, I was like, you know, I am going to be a Uniota varsity basketball player. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like when kids grow up now, I see it. I've seen it for 20 years in teaching in Painted Valley. You can see it in the eyes of like sixth and seventh graders at Painted Valley. I'm going to play Friday night football under those lights right there and win championships. And they believe that. And that's what they're going to do. Now I think there's less and less of that. I think it's more of, you know, they almost play for their high school team just to kind of get ready for their summer legion team or their travel ball team. So, I think a lot of it's just the culture thing.
So what you're saying is people have shifted in their allegiance from what I can do for the school system that I belong to what I can do for me. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, I think that's fair. I mean, I hate to be that blunt with it because, again, I think it's a culture change. But I think with all the transferring, the different things and people moving around or so forth, I think anyone who's saying that there's the same type of school loyalty and school pride and so forth. And that's not to say that's still not out there with certain programs and certain places. But I just think it's far, far different in terms of, you know, and you'll even see it in the summer team. You'll see some people in three different years, they'll play for three different summer teams. You know what I mean? It's just one of those where there's so many more options now. Yeah. Maybe before, John, you didn't have the options of choosing.
Right.
For now, there's so many more leagues out there and there's so many more teams and so forth that, you know, that's what you're looking for. So, man, it's a topic that I'm sure we'll get more and more feedback on, but I do think it's appropriate because I think in the spring, guys, is when we feel the effects or see the crazy dynamics probably more than ever.
Yeah, just seemingly as the intro said, it seemingly continues to take over high school sports, and it does so, what you're saying, it's most apparent during the spring. Yeah.
And the only other thing I'll throw in there, I know we've spent a ton of time on this, but John, the only other thing I would say is, you've heard me talk about marrying the old school with the new school, of trying to embrace, hey, if you have kids playing, then get better and make it positive. But I would encourage kids that still want to play the two and three sports. You don't always have to get in the car and drive to, you know, Indiana to play in a volleyball tournament. It might just be spend, you know, two days a week for a half hour, 3 days a week with a half hour with your own coach or your own teammate working on your serving or working on your individual skill. The individual workouts have completely given the coaches a second chance to regain control of their program. And I'm even looking into, John, taking it all the way down into the elementary. So not only with the high school kid, but, you know, I've had some workouts with some junior high kids, had some workouts the other day with a fifth grader. I mean, all the way down to the point where if kids want to get better, then let's go get our hands back on our program and try to figure out a way to coexist in the day of all these options.
Well, that's some good stuff. And there's lots more to be said on that. And, you know, if anybody listening out there has some feedback, we'd love to hear about that. And we'll tell you how to provide that feedback in just a little bit towards the end of the show. Guys, up next, we turn to facilities, as several schools are looking to take it to the next level within the next 12 to 18 months. We're going to talk facilities here in just a little bit, but first, another mention of Crown Hill Golf Club. Up there at 9500 U.S. Route 22 West in Williamsport. We appreciate everything that Kevin does for all the golfers in the area. 740-986-4653 is a telephone number, and you can also look up their offerings on the web at crownhillgolfclub.com. Still, time for you to get a membership up there that fits your schedule, and you want to call them to discuss any custom memberships. That's Crown Hill Golf Club. Appreciate their support of the podcast and SBC Sports Talk. Guys, topic of facilities, lots of news here over the past probably, 3 weeks we've been off. The topic of facilities mainly is with turf. And we're going to talk a little bit about the impact on all sports. Shane, you want to kind of get us into this?
Well, there's something I want to throw at John here to get us started.
Okay.
This is really intriguing to me because, obviously Chillicothe has the incredible facility they put in there, and Zane Trace follows up, and obviously Uniota is a big school and some different things. And I know in the news, Paint Valley has been in the news, Piketon's been in the news, and some things that have created. I just wanted to get John's take first to start. When we talk about how this impacts, I think we always think of, football benefits the most from field turf, and that's probably true. But as I look around and I see track and I see soccer, and I know John's impact on soccer in the community in terms of people really love that extra coverage we were doing this year, and even a baseball, softball, we just talked about finding places to practice and different things, the cross-country atmospheres and so forth. But I wanted to go to Uniota and ask you specifically, John, take us back to how the soccer field was put in. Here they are with a facility that's lighted, has lights and so forth. That has to have played a role in, as they built the tunnel underneath and so forth at Uniota, not having it. And what kind of pressure do you feel like a school like a Uniota feels as, say, a Chillicothe has it and a Zane Trace has it and so forth? What kind of dynamic has gone into using Uniota as an example, maybe even Westfall, that I know you have background as an example of what goes into some of these facility talks? And do you think some of the other facilities that maybe Uniota went with early has now kind of maybe hurt their growth in terms of where they would like to go here in the near future?
Yeah, I know when I was in school, we played soccer on the football field. So by, I'll say, the middle of September, the field was borderline destroyed. Mm-hmm. You could see it the kind of the same way down at Waverly the last few years, because once you get rain on a Friday night, well,
right,
then the field's in trouble. And then if there's rain during a soccer game, field's in more trouble. And then with having all the middle school teams, the girls team, middle school football, then you have like the Little Tanks program playing and all these teams playing on the field. So eventually, once they knock down the old elementary, there's that big land. And I know the Uniota soccer boosters kind of put in like, hey, we're not using this area, can we try to use it for the soccer field? I know Coach Saliday, Coach Brown at the time, different coaches were able to kind of get that whole thing started. I know I was asked to help put the lights up, which I think I may have intentionally overslept that day to help with that stuff. And that was after I was out of school too. So, it was kind of a soccer program idea. Well, then they got the tunnel, they got the new locker room facility, and then all of a sudden they had to figure out the watering because both fields were getting watered. So then they put in a sprinkler system over on the soccer field and the football field. So I think putting in those systems may have actually slowed down any chance to get turf at Unioto, because they're updating those older facilities. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the football field's doing better with, you know, less sport on it. But turf would be a big advantage. Also, in the next couple of years, they're going to need a new track in general anyway, because that track is getting right. close to 20 years old. So with the track, they're going to need – so that's where I think the turf talk will come in a lot more at Unioto, especially with Chillicothe, Zane Trace, now Painted Valley and Piketon putting it in. And I think there's going to be more pressure on Unioto to do it. I know they have to tie up some financial stuff individually anyway. Now, I'll say one thing that probably hurts Unioto against those other schools is – and I guess St. Trace is also kind of in the same kind of area, but they have Kingston. Unioto doesn't directly have a community. I guess, you know, I always kind of joke about Frenchtown, but there's not really, it's part of Chillicothe. Unioto is a lot of it, where Piketon is Piketon. Mm-hmm. Painted Valley is Bainbridge and Bourneville, to where there's not a whole lot of, you know, extra benefactors that could help out, like I know with the Zane Trace facility. So they had to find sponsorship. So where is that sponsorship money going to come from? So that's, it kind of, you know, makes it more difficult. Westfall is the same, because I know with Westfall, a lot of that area is farmland, to where they've had a hard time with levies passing. So it's going to be hard for them to justify getting turf if they're having trouble getting this money to keep up with the actual school itself, because obviously school is the most important. Education is the most important thing here. But I do think with these other places, these other schools like Unioto, I'll even throw Adena out there, Unioto, Adena, Westfall are going to start feeling some heat on the fact that all these other local schools are getting this. And, you know, it's awesome for these schools. I know Payne Valley lost out on a home playoff game. They still got the win and everything. Mm-hmm. But that atmosphere, I think, would have been so much more fun in Bainbridge.
It hurts financially, too.
Yeah, it's big time financial hurt. So you saw at the end of the year, that game against Adena.
Yeah.
It's played in a mud pit because – you know, right. So I think turf is the way to go because of all these extra little league things going on, middle school, Ohio weather in general. Now, one thing I'll say is the upkeep of it will eventually get expensive too, because I know Jackson had to redo a lot of theirs in the last couple of years, and theirs is about 15 years old. I think Lucasville's had to redo theirs.
So I guess my argument to that is, John, in that 10 or 15 years, how much money has Jackson made because right. of it? You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
So I think the same dynamic attitude it takes to put it in has to continue over the next 10 or 15 years to make it worthwhile. That's why I wanted to ask you the question I asked you, is because I felt like, you know, obviously, football's at the center of these things. And what's funny about it is you start to say, well, it's going to take this much money to fix a field, to make a playoff. Well, that matters what school we're at.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, some people be like, just throw some grass seed down there. We'll play a football game Friday night. You know what I mean? And then there's other places like, whoa, that's not going to work. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So that's interesting. But to me, what gets lost here is think about what it does for your – track program and what you can host. Think about mm-hmm. what it does for your on-site atmospheres of cross country. Think about what it does for your soccer programs. Think about what even Zane Trace is getting creative. Think about what it's doing for baseball, softball. Yes. I know I did an interview in Great Seal Sports, which, by the way, that magazine's really been fun to write. If you haven't had a chance to get your hands on that, it's been really cool. But Zane Trace has been really creative in terms of how Ron Allen's told me they utilize it to practice softball, take one in, baseball, take one in, and they're able to do a lot of things when any other time you wouldn't have been able to get outside right. at all. So it's just it impacts your school across the way. But I do think it's funny on how it has to be a school-wide commitment or go. Like even at Paint Valley, we haven't ruled out it's been very open-minded that as we get through this project here, they're going to host the Andy Haynes, John, here in mid-April, as they always do, and then it's ready to roll. And again, trying to have dynamic leadership and seeing how we can grow from this, and this, we haven't ruled out trying to do some things with the baseball, softball field within the next year. So, boy, would that be special. So, like, in terms of, you talk about unique to the area. I mean, I just think you'd be able to do a lot of different things. So, it's an interesting topic. I think that, and how does it impact the other facilities? I know certain places are coming up on a time where they've got to be looking for gyms. I know Unieto's in the news with a gym, but not just them, but some schools are to the point where how much longer are they truly going to be able to play junior high basketball games in some of the places they're playing them in? So even if your high school gym's okay, your school's still in need of a second gym and some different things. So, it's funny how these topics have come together tonight, but one of the biggest things John was mentioning with like football and soccer and so forth is how, again, little league sports have grown so much. The need for facilities and different things have come with it. And I just think it's going to be something that's really interesting to follow. But obviously, Bruce, it does a lot to create some excitement and create some really nice facilities for these young kids to take advantage of.
It does. It really gives us stuff to talk about on SVC Sports Talk, doesn't it? Just for those of us that don't know, what does it cost to put turf in a football field?
Well, that's the funny part of it is it's like anything else now. There's more and more options to where it's getting more.
So you can have the Cadillac choices. Or you can have something.
Yeah, you can really go all out or, you know, a lot of times now what's happened is turf has grown so much at the higher levels. You know, obviously like at a Division I football school, they might put turf down and put new turf down every year, every other year, whatever. Well, you know, high schools could take out 1 year turf or whatever and still just fine. So, a lot of it's preparing the facility for it. You'll hear a lot of different things. When we had talked baseball, softball, I'd heard somewhere around the 250,000 mark would be for depending on how much of a section, like on the softball field or like on the baseball field, if we ever did it, we just do the infield only. Mm-hmm. Well, then you can kind of start to look at the football facility as well. But I think you also have to look at that number over, say, a 10-year period, as John just said. Okay, like if we get 10 years out of it, mm-hmm. Okay, in that 10 years, how much manpower do you save? How much? You know, yes. Resources do you save and how much money do you generate off of that? How much money can we generate off of a field turf on our softball field in the next 10 years?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it depends. Again, it's dynamic leadership. It depends how creative you want to be. It depends on how much involvement you want to get. That's what makes these things so fun because, it just the sky's the limit. It's just a matter of you got to have everybody on the same page. You can't have a situation where you put it in and you have other people be like, ah, we didn't need this or I'm not sure about this. It just doesn't work. You really got to have everybody on the same page.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then you got to think about replacing it down the road. I mean, you know, you got to have almost a sinking fund to put money aside because in 10 years you're going to have probably not as big an expenditure, but it's going to be significant. So I think that's where people err sometimes. It wears out too. So you got to be thinking about that down the road. Big, big expenditure. So, all right. Well, guys, throughout the year, our final segment's been a popular one. And for spring, we change it up just a little. Well, we'll get here to our Coach's Corner in a moment, but once again, we want to mention North Fork Animal Clinic Boarding and Grooming. They're located at 2260 Anderson Station Road in Chillicothe, where we care. Open Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday, 9 to 12. Of course, their doggy daycare is also available Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. We appreciate Dr. Blake Lloyd and all his staff helping us out here on the podcast. North Fork Animal Clinic Boarding and Grooming, 773-PETS. As we move to the Coach's Corners, as I mentioned, we've kind of changed it up a little bit. We've inserted a little bit more description here. And guys, we're going to give each of you an opportunity to impart some wisdom here as you become older coaches. But we refer back to when you were younger coaches. So the question today is, when I was a younger spring coach, I wish someone would have told me blank. When I was a younger spring coach, I wish someone would have told me blank. Mr. Bruce, what say you?
I say to trust the process of the entire season and not live and die based on game-by-game results.
Okay.
And I think, especially in the spring, it's a long season. You're not going to... It's a short season, but it's a long season.
Lots of activity.
Since you're playing every day.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you live and die every day, I mean, it's going to be, you're not going to last. I know my first year, we lost our first game 15-1. Mm. The first game I ever coached, went down to Edina and just got throttled. Then the next night we went to Taze Valley, who's really good also, and lost them in 9 innings. And it was kind of funny because that first night I couldn't sleep at all. And then the next day, we had that, it was a great game. And I think at that point it kind of clicked for me quickly, like, okay, well, we just made a huge improvement from day one to day two. So, it's a great thing.
Yeah.
And if you live and die every night, it's gonna wear on you. And now, obviously, I'm looking at it more at the JV level, as opposed to the varsity level, because with the JV level, you kind of don't know what you're gonna get every night. Varsity, you have a better idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you're doing things the right way, you're doing the simple things right, things are going to work out. I'll use a professional player for the Cubs, like Anthony Rizzo. Last year he hit like 180 for the first month and a half of the season. But if you're doing things the right way, the average is going to get back up. He ends up hitting like 270 for the year. So by not making big adjustments, things end up working out. So don't freak out after, don't scrap everything you're doing after one game.
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe things didn't work out. If you're doing it the right way, you're teaching it the right way, it's going to work out in the end. Results will come. It can get frustrating at times, but it's going to end up working out. Just keep doing things the right way. Keep grinding and don't get frustrated.
All right. Shane, how do you answer this fill in the blank here? When I was a younger spring coach, I wish someone would have told me blank.
I wish someone would have told me you have to approach it just a little bit different. That doesn't mean that you don't want to make it important, but you have to understand your role a little bit in order to know about how to go about making it important. And John, I guess we've touched on this throughout, is when I'm dealing with young student athletes and I'm trying to sell my sport, I've got to understand that I may not have some of that wine and dine term I said earlier.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, the prime time 7 o'clock, under the lights on a Friday night, or the gym of 2,000 people, or even the volleyball game of this or that, or whatever. So I need to understand that And I've got to adjust in terms of how I try to go about selling my particular sport. And that doesn't mean you don't make it important. That doesn't mean you don't try to have some rules and follow. But I think you have to understand a little bit more open-mindedness in terms of what it is you're demanding of your players, and then what you're willing to give yourself and so forth. So goes back to my opening a little bit, I guess, Bruce, in terms of the people involved that are very, very passionate. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to demand your kids be as passionate, but you also have to understand that it is different. It is going to be a little bit of a different dynamic, and you have to keep that in mind in terms of your sales pitch and how you go about running the everyday grind. Because that's the other factor, I guess, John just touched on, is, you know, we only do this for about 6 weeks.
Yeah.
But man, we do it all the time. In basketball, you might say, okay, we start in November and we're playing all the way into March and can play 22 times. Yeah, we're playing, 27 games in about a 5.5-6 week window here. Yeah. So, I mean, it's all the time, and you have to keep those in mind. There has to be some different dynamics in terms of I'll give you just some quick examples. I know we're up against the clock a little bit, but, like, you know, if you play five times in 6 days and school nights and all this testing going on and so forth, different things, you may have to let kids sign out with parents and so forth, where maybe when I first started coaching, you win as a team, lose as a team, everybody ride the bus. Well, yeah. That doesn't always work in a spring sport where you're playing every night, and who knows where and so forth. Mm-hmm. And different dynamics. So you have to kind of pick the battles that really mean the most to you, and understand that that there's more than just a basketball way to do it, is what I had to learn. And I still found a way in baseball. I think if you ask anyone who's played for me, they'd say, gosh, he loves that program. He'd do anything for that program. But yet I've still learned to adjust and maybe back off a little bit on some of the things that, you know, that I see fit in terms of doing so. So I think that would just be something really, really important for young coaches to realize, especially young coaches who coach other sports, who might see football done a certain way, or maybe you see volleyball done a certain way, or basketball done a certain way. You know, spring sport may just have a little different dynamic to it for you.
All right. Some words of wisdom from our older coaches to the younger spring coach out there. Guys, we want to give everybody the opportunity to comment, to submit some ideas and so forth. In order to do that, you need some contact information, and I'm about to provide that. So write these down. If you want to contact Shane, you may do so through email at admin1@svcsportzone.com. His Twitter handle is @svcsportzone. And, of course, when they do tweet, you can search on the hashtag. They use SVC Sports Talk. I know Derek does that as well. On Facebook, Shane maintains two profiles. You can contact him there. Shane Combs, SVC Sports Zone, and svcsportzone.com are the two profiles. For John, we have email. His jbruce1018@yahoo.com, and his yet unexplained Twitter handle, which is @coconutwallpapa. And he, too, uses the SVC Sports Talk hashtag. And then Derek, who's still contributing off and on for our website and so forth, he uses the verified account of DW1509 on Twitter. And he has an email address, which is DerekW1509@gmail.com. Back over to you, Shane.
Well, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. Derek's had some nice pieces already in the first week here. I know he covered Little Paint Valley softball, baseball. He had a nice piece on Piketon baseball there on the website. You can find that Derek webpage right there, the link to it right on the homepage. It's always one of our lead headlines. I know I've really enjoyed the opportunity to be writing for the Great Seal Sports. I think I'm 7 or 8 months into this first year with them. The recent issue came out with the Cam Evans, Josie Fisher cover, where we highlighted, John, the SVC champions from our winter sports. The one coming out later this month, and it's kind of weird because, you know, these things are almost written a month behind, so to speak. but the one that'll be coming out later this month will highlight a lot of our spring. It has Hallie Pinkerton of Uniota, Ethan Kunkel of Edina, Lane Ruby, track at Southeastern. That's the SVC coverage. There'll also be some young ladies, some coverage there for some of the talent there, Chillicothe as well on the track side. But SVC wise, I know Ruby and Pinkerton and Kunkel getting a little coverage there. So it's just really neat way. It's neat to see the spring coverage there that we've been missing. It's really coming. Appreciate what David Weinsong does there at the Gazette as well, and so forth. Had a chance to be on a podcast with him during our break and so forth. So just appreciate all those. I know John's working hard with SEO Preps and some of those people there and so forth. So just John, I guess what I'm saying is what's maybe been missing the last couple of years, we've been able to really stick with it and really give, especially these juniors and seniors that are really, really good at spring sports, we're giving them some overdue coverage. So some good stuff. So, guys, it's nice to be back. Looking forward to doing it all week here, once a week throughout the spring season, and we'll do it again next week. So until that next time, for Triple Crown Family Fun Center and all the other sponsors on the website, for Bruce Knox and all the people behind the scenes and at DBK Media Services, and for John Bruce, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting SVCSportsZone.com, where we are 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC, 100% of the time.